So today, more than ever, we should be talking about mental wellness, especially in the creative industries. So sit back, relax, and let's go.
It's time for the main event of the evening.
This is Artwell, and you are listening to the Creative Rant.
The World Health Organization indicates that by 2030, mental health will be the biggest crisis we face. The creative industries are not exactly shielded from this looming pandemic, as there's plenty of studies to prove this. Not so long ago, the Ulster University ran a survey on mental health and the well-being within the creative sectors in Ireland. The study found that the likelihood of mental health problems within the sector is 3 times higher than the general population, the most diagnosed disorders being anxiety and depression. Another study that was ran in 2020 in Australia by Never Not Creative, UNLTD and Evermind found that nearly 1 in 5 creatives show severe or externally severe symptoms of depression, while 24% show high symptoms of anxiety. They also found that stress was the key contributor to impacting mental health. In Africa, it's a bit more trickier to find stats around the creative industry, but when you take a macro view of the landscape, it gets even more concerning. Let's take a look at 2 examples from the WHO. Less than 1% of government health budgets are dedicated to mental health services. Another example is that 85% of people suffering from depression on the continent have no access to effective treatment. Today, I want to talk about mental wellness, but I'm not going to focus on the link between creativity and mental wellness. I want to speak about mental wellness as a topic in general. And to do this, I'm going to speak to a psychologist. I want to find out what exactly is mental wellness and how exactly do we maintain it. So sit back, relax, and let's go.
My name is Romy Tolman. I'm a clinical psychologist. I'm within my community service here. So I'm currently working within the public health space. I've been within the psychological field for about 10 years, and I've worn a couple of different hats. But I've got to say that 10 years in, I'm still loving it. And I'm really enjoying being kind of on my journey.
Awesome. Thank you so much for giving us your time. I know you are incredibly busy, so I am going to make sure that I am super pointed with my questions, then I'm going to go to the first one right now. So for many of us, the concept of mental wellness is new. And when I say us, I'm not only talking about globally, but specifically on the African continent. What exactly is it? What is mental wellness?
So it's such a great question, and I think that there's a lot of kind of mystery and, like you said, assumption around exactly what is mental wellness. And I think the reason why it's a great question is because it is actually quite hard to say simplify, because for a lot of people, mental wellness means something completely different. But what I can say quite broadly is that mental wellness or mental well-being or mental health, at least for me, the way that I understand it, is that it encompasses many different kinds of domains within one's life, and there's almost a synchronicity. So between emotional well-being, social well-being, occupational well-being, for some people spiritual well-being, and even physical well-being. And there is this sense of balance and wholeness within all those different realms, all kind of working together in order to enable someone to feel ready and completely set to be facing life.
So I've always heard the term mental wellness, and then on the opposite side of the spectrum, heard the term mental illness. Mm-hmm. So if you are not mental well, you have a mental illness. Is it that simple of an explanation, or is it a bit more complex than that?
They're definitely a lot more complex. They're polarities, right? And I definitely consider mental health on a spectrum, and we can say mental illness is on one end and mental health is on the other, so they are connected, but it's not so black and white. So the way that I like to put it is, you know, the absence of mental illness does not equate with mental health. When we think about mental illness, we're looking at specific symptoms that someone may exhibit that will impact on their sense of ability to thrive in life. But these are specific symptoms that we're talking about, and they will generally incapacitate an individual from socially, occupationally, and otherwise practically functioning. But even when you remove those symptoms from the individual, you provide the therapy, perhaps medication is indicated, and you remove those symptoms, you don't necessarily have an individual that's left with something called mental health. You know, mental health is so much more than just not feeling mentally unokay. You know, that's where this whole like holistic sense of well-being comes in. You know, you can remove the symptoms of, say, depression or anxiety, but what else is the individual doing in order to thrive in their life? So, you know, one way of putting it, instead of using the word mental illness and mental health, is you'll find some psychologists use flourishing and languishing. You know, so is this person flourishing? Are they thriving? Or are they really languishing? And, you know, sometimes most people actually sit somewhere kind of on the middle of the spectrum. You know, they're not mentally ill, but they're not doing mentally really well. They're not thriving. They're not flourishing. They're just somewhere in the middle. They're not exhibiting, say, all symptoms that would necessarily make one meet the criteria for a mental illness, like major depression or something like schizophrenia or psychosis, but they're really struggling. And I think that that's something that, you know, we like to normalize, you know, in general, is you can be suffering without there necessarily being a label that has to be placed upon you. You're allowed to suffer and struggle with your mental health without necessarily it equating to mental illness. I know that that's quite like a chunky answer, and I haven't really answered it very directly, but the two definitely are related. The one, mental illness can be viewed in a very kind of clinical way. We contextualize it in terms of there is something mentally dysfunctional within the individual, and that isn't necessarily, I don't mean necessarily mean that in a way to like further stigmatize people or attach negative connotations. Plenty of people suffer from mental illness and manage through their lives with the correct kind of treatment. But yeah, so mental illness is much more in a clinical dysfunctional category, where someone has kind of lapsed into a state where they are not able to otherwise manage their lives in a way that they are practically, socially, or occupationally thriving or flourishing. And mental health is something that anyone can most certainly attain. It just takes quite a lot of effort to get the balance right within your life in order to really feel that holistic feeling of thriving or flourishing on a day-to-day basis. But I am also someone of the opinion is that we've all got bad days. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got good days and bad days. And sometimes just having a bad day, we don't need to name it as, okay, I'm maybe really struggling with my mental health. It could just be like, you know what, you're just having a bad day. And we're actually just all human here and we're allowed those.
Mm-hmm. And I love this idea of flourishing and you know on your good days and vice versa. I think that just makes it a bit more thoughtful from a way that you explain it, rather than jumping straight to you have mental illness.
So when it comes to COVID-19, have you seen a drastic change in the amount of people that are starting to come see you now? I can imagine there must be a huge shift, especially with people working from home, people losing their jobs, and all those kinds of things.
Absolutely. I mean, we've seen a notable increase in mental health challenges over this period, not only within the South African context, but internationally as well. A lot more people are reaching out for psychological assistance, which is wonderful. I think people should be reaching out for psychological assistance even when, you know, there isn't a global crisis or a pandemic. But it is, of course, incredibly concerning as more people are significantly presenting with symptoms that can be classified as mental illness. But outside of, once again, kind of the diagnostic presentation of individuals, I think everybody's mental health has taken a huge knock for various reasons. You know, going back to my original, you know, the way that I defined mental health, it's, you know, looking at the relational and social, occupational, say spiritual for some people, physical, at least every person that I know, I'm not sure about you, one of those domains in life has taken a massive hit. And for most people, more than one of those domains, and I have taken that massive hit. You know, kind of off the bat, initially, socially, people have to distance. Socially, people were isolated. Socially, people were cut off. And I think this is where we really started to see that when, you know, one of those little domains in life starts to drop, the impact that it has on pulling down the others. You know, okay, well, occupationally, maybe I kept my job. So, all right, well, I've still got my job. I was fortunate enough to work from home, but socially, I'm incredibly isolated, and that's making my job harder. You know, all of a sudden, a stressful work day feels like an insurmountable, absolutely overwhelming work day. And I think so many people were faced with this reality that just kind of having one of those facets of life severely decrease or stop being able to support the individual. So, I mean, we can talk about spirituality as well. You know, people weren't able to congregate in churches or synagogues or mosques, and a lot of people felt a huge disconnect spiritually. And for a lot of people, that wasn't very supportive towards their mental well-being. And then that dropped out the way. And all of a sudden, we started to see these kinds of massive voids within individuals' lives where they weren't able to look after themselves or diversify how they really look after their mental health. And people have really suffered. People have suffered terribly. And, you know, we speak about the pandemic on, you know, this very physical level, that there is this physical virus, there's a physical disease that one can contract, but the more silent, more insidious pandemic that happened was the mental health one. And I think that we're going to be facing the consequences of this mental health kind of secondary pandemic for a very, very long time after we physically do reach a place where globally we are feeling more safe.
What do you think employers and employees could do to better maintain the mental health?
So what's interesting about workplace mental health is that a lot of evidence actually suggests that in order for employers to be better able to ensure an environment that is conducive towards mental well-being within their employees, is actually employers and people in charge, people like managers, people that are supervisors, any kind of superior within an organization, within a business, anyone that people are accountable to, actually receive some level of training around being able to identify at a relatively early point when an employee is really struggling. Oftentimes when it comes to, you know, chaos and disorder in the workplace, it's when things have already gone too far. You know, someone's been struggling, but they've been struggling for a really long time. You know, they've dropped the ball a couple of times, but now it's happening more frequently. Perhaps the person's just missing tons of work, they're missing tons of deadlines. And actually being able to recognize early signs that an individual is possibly suffering with their mental health and being able to approach that person and provide a space that is judgment-free, just to check in, just be like, are you okay? And is there actually anything that we can do from our side in order to support you, it can make a world of difference. I most certainly encourage all businesses to have employee wellness programs, most certainly have a psychologist or a registered counselor or a social worker on standby that the company is willing to send their employees to for mental psychological support should the need arise. But yeah, it sometimes really just comes down to people in charge being able to identify when someone is struggling right off the bat and being able to have open and transparent conversation about it. To be able to create a culture where suffering doesn't have to happen in secret and silence, because that's actually just where it starts to fester. And oftentimes, you know, having someone in a position of more power within an organization or in a company, being able to approach employees and just check in mentally, it can create quite an incredible working environment, one that people feel supported in and one that people want to be able to dedicate their time to. They're willing to put in effort and they are willing to, you know, take the measures that they can to look after themselves, because that they know that they're being kindly watched. you know, that their struggles do mean something, and not in a punitive way, but in a genuine concern kind of way. And for people working for the workforce, gosh, burnout is something that is so common and so just, gosh, there has been a burnout pandemic for a very, very long time. And I think that, you know, when I speak to employees of any kind of organization, it really is about protecting one against burnout, because burnout is such a huge trigger for mental health challenges and even things like the development of mental illness. And ways in which one can kind of go about looking after themselves and preventing burnout to the best of their capacity is to have really good work boundaries. And that's something that the pandemic has really affected, because working from home kind of screws up your work boundaries, because now, you know, work is always where you are. You don't leave work behind and then come home. Work is inside your home. Work is literally on your laptop that might be sitting on your bed. You know, it's at the table that you eat from. But having some really clear working boundaries is really, really important. The clocking in and the clocking out time. If you're working overtime, that's really well structured. You know, something I know it might seem crazy, but it's getting dressed for work. You know, presenting yourself well for work. And it's also making sure that your life outside of work is really nourishing. That you engage in nourishing activities that are good for you. So I am obviously referring to self-care. And that's such a term that, I mean, so many people throw around a lot. I've got a psychotherapy page on Instagram, so I'm very kind of involved in the social media mental health sphere and the mental health world. And my gosh, you know, the term self-care is something that is thrown around a ton, and what I would like to say is that it is very individual, and you know, you can receive 100 self-care tips and only really one on the list is something that speaks directly to you. Self-care looks so differently for everybody. For some people it is sitting in front of the TV and watching, you know, 3 straight hours of series and eating a bowl of popcorn, but for someone else that might actually really negatively impact their mood and they need to get outdoors and they need to go for a walk. You know, for someone else that maybe has the means with, you know, going and spoiling yourself with some kind of, you know, spa package. Otherwise, it could be just going and doing a lovely dinner with friends or cooking dinner yourself. So self-care can really mean anything that truly nourishes you. And, you know, what kind of falls in line with both self-care and the prevention of burnout is really, and this is more of the kind of hard work when we speak about, you know, the work psychologically and the work mentally. It's really kind of connecting to who you are on a daily basis outside of your identity that you form within your workspace. Because your work can't purely and in totality be based within your work identity. That would be quite a difficult self-work to maintain, especially when work gets tough. So it's about really connecting with, you know, who are you outside of work? Who are you within your relationships? What are your hobbies? What do you love? What is even, you know, things that you love to watch on TV? What are the things that you like to talk about? What are the books that you enjoy reading? Or, you know, what is the content that you gravitate towards to on social media? And making sure that you do a little bit of everything throughout your week, scatter it. But even if you're doing 1 or 2 acts of self-care a day, being present within a moment, if that's something that helps, when feeling overwhelmed at work, being able to take 3 steps back and taking 5 minutes to gather yourself. These are all small ways, but they are very meaningful ways and go a very long way in preventing workplace burnout. But I mean, workplace burnout, I can talk about it for about 5 to 10 hours. That's just a little tiny blurb on the topic.
I heard you mention something about a therapy page on Instagram. Are you able to share what that page is? Is it open to the public or is it a private one?
So my Instagram page is Psychotherapy with Romy. The handle is psychotherapy.with.romy. And Romy is spelled with an I, so it's R-O-M-I.
Awesome. We will definitely put that in the descriptor. If you missed it, just look at the descriptor of the podcast and you will find it right there in the descriptor. Last question. I know that you are incredibly busy. What do you do to make sure that you are level, right? That you are keeping mentally well in your lifetime? One or two things that you do in your world.
So I often think that actually, you know, mental health care workers are a fascinating sample of people to look at who, that you could spend ages studying the ways in which they actually go about maintaining or completely ruining their own mental health. Some of us are very, very good at doing our jobs, but not necessarily good at applying what we know theoretically and practically into our own lives. But I do try. I do make an effort. I can't say that. For me, turning inward and spending quiet time is really essential. My job entails speaking for, you know, 8 to 9 hours a day, to be emotionally attuned for 8 to 9 hours a day, to kind of open my mind and allow someone else's world to kind of envelop me for 8 to 9 hours a day. So generally, within my day, I like to take quiet time, quiet space to myself, kind of just at least have one or two just mindful moments. And that really does help me during, say, the work week. I've got a very good sleep schedule that I try and stick to, and I mostly do stick to, have a bedtime and a wake-up time, and that really brings a sense of consistency to me because I know that I need to function on a certain number of hours of sleep. Otherwise, I'm just not going to function. And I understand neurologically that, you know, I want to be able to best equip myself in order to support others. So I do try kind of look after my physical health in that way. My weekdays are quite routine. And like I said, I generally do try and take those mindful moments just to myself, and whether that's kind of taking myself for a little bit of a walk in between patients, or even just sitting quietly, listening to music, having kind of a moment to myself. And then my weekends are spent doing anything but thinking and talking about psychology. I love to watch movies. I like to sleep in, eat good food. And now that things, at least for the moment, are quietening down with COVID, I do like to also get out. I like to take drives and take trips and to see friends and to really nourish that my social well-being, especially after all this isolation for so long. I found that my need to nourish my social sphere is definitely there. So I do try and keep mindful of all those domains within my life and try and set aside some time. And, you know, I don't get it right every day, but I do make an effort to at least get something right every day, because that's what matters at the end of the day. It's not necessarily looking back and looking like, oh gosh, like I could have managed that better. Like, we can always manage things better, and there will always be someone who manages things better than us. But if we at least manage to get through something that we feel quite proud of, or even just handle a moment that we otherwise thought would crush us, it's really good to acknowledge that. So I do try and look back at the end of the day and look where, you know, instead of floating, where my feet touch the ground. And I like to count those moments at the end of the day. It makes me feel like life has a sense of meaning.
Fantastic. I'm so appreciative of the time that you've given us. I know that you're super busy, and this is probably the time that you should be switching off from work. So I want to give that back to you. Thank you so much. I appreciate the time, and have a wonderful evening. And thank you so much.
It's time for the main event of the evening.
This is Artwell, and you are listening to the Creative Rant.